Well, I think theater is sometimes undermined. You kind of see it as just like a form of entertainment and, you know, something that doesn't have much of a power. But I find it extremely powerful when you get people in a room, they're sitting in their seats and they are forced to watch different from TV or television because people can pause things and leave. And, you know, you can't do that in a theater. So you're forced to think about this issue that's being presented on stage.
That was Chantal Gehring talking about how she finds the power to make change in the performing arts. Hello and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM, playing from the UBC Point Grey campus on unceded Musqueam territory. I'm your host, Emma Ng, and you're listening to Goody. At Goody, we talk to the do-gooders who are using business, innovation, and creativity to create positive change in the world. Today, we will be talking to actress, choreographer, singer, and multi-talented Chantal Gehring about why she believes in the power of art to make change. Chantal has a long history of the performance arts, including performing in musicals and local productions, singing internationally and at the 2010 Olympics, as well as dancing competitively in many styles, including Polynesian, and acting as an extra on hit shows. Most recently, she starred in the award-winning play Concord Floral in 2017, where she performed through the Lower Mainland, including in the famous Push Festival, and performed at the Vancouver International Children's Festival for One of a Kind, a self-written piece. And finally, she is the Director of Sponsorship at Ideas Exchange at UBC and will be launching an exciting new project soon. So, Chantal, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so happy to have you here on the show, especially before you become a household name like Meryl Streep. And you've done so much, so I guess we'll just talk about how it all started back in your childhood. So you were born in Costa Rica and at a very young age moved to Burnaby, and by 3 you were in performing arts classes. Was there a reason your mom signed you up for that?
Funny enough that you ask that. I was the most energetic and outgoing child ever when I was younger. At like the age of 10, my mom said I could sing and dance like before I spoke properly. And when I went to my grandparents' house, when we came to Canada, I would always sing baya baya, which means dance, dance in Spanish, because my nannies in Costa Rica spoke to me in Spanish. So I was very outgoing. I was bringing everyone out to do the Macarena with me. And yeah, I was definitely an artsy child.
So what was it like being a performer at such a young age?
I was very dedicated. I remember rewatching my papa. He filmed lots of my younger ballet performances, and I was very, I don't know, I just really was concentrating on my moves, and I'd practice it at home, and then I'd do the performance, and it just, I don't know, it's funny to watch because I was so excited to do performing when I was so young. It was just something that I just thought was a part of my life. It was just something I've always done.
And what do you feel performance arts added to your life at such a young age?
I think the arts really allowed me to be comfortable in front of other people. So I was very, I worked well in groups when I was in elementary school, and I feel like I was just overall more comfortable in front of other people and just doing cool and wacky things and not being as self-conscious about what I'm doing, so allowed me to explore lots of things I cared about because I wasn't afraid of, you know, being judged or anything.
So how did you get into the different forms of performance art that you are now in? Mm-hmm. For example, like dance, choir, hula dancing.
So I started I started with dance. Dance was kind of like my first tier. And then I joined choir when I was like 6, and I was singing in a group still, so I wasn't like solo album artist child, but I did singing in choir, and then I did karate as well. So I kind of explored that, but it was kind of cool because karate in a weird way is like a choreographed dance,
yeah.
Exactly. And it was really fun. And then around grade 5, grade 6, I took my very first like musical theater acting summer camp, and I was really into it. It was like a blend of everything that I wanted, but beforehand I just took first ballet for the first 2 years that I took performing arts when I was like 3 and 4, and then I was like, Mom, I saw this video of my papa in Hawaii and I need to do hula dancing. So I quit ballet, did hula dancing competitively for 6 years, and then and I found theater later on. Theater, like acting, was a kind of more high school thing.
Did you have dreams growing up of being like a pop star or like, I don't know, a famous opera singer or singing at Broadway?
Funny enough, I found like an old portfolio I made when I was in elementary school of like, ooh, what do you want to be in the future? And it was like me as a celebrity. I found like myself in this dress that you wear to the red carpet events. And I guess as a child, I saw like movie stars obviously in movies, and I was like, oh, like I could do that. I could do that. And then I guess what I wanted to do. But I always thought of it in more of a I want to be famous kind of thing. Like I want people to give me attention, because I was still, when I was younger, you're so self-conscious and so like selfish in a weird way when you're younger, because mm-hmm. I feel like I cared so much about what I thought all the time. And so that was definitely more of an attention thing. But I will tell you later how that has changed for me.
So do you have a favorite genre? Like, whether it's dance. I know you started with dance, mm-hmm. singing, acting, playwriting.
It's really difficult. It's the overall experience that just makes me so passionate about performing. It's really hard to pinpoint. I can kind of say the parts that I enjoy about it, because I don't know, it's the blend of everything that makes it so exciting. Like being on stage or even being in an audience, you like pick up energy that you don't anywhere else. You kind of feel more alive after a performance. And dancing is obviously a huge part of how I act, because movement is such a huge thing for me. And even right now, my hands are flying everywhere because I'm just such an active person with my movement. So movement's really great. But just also spending time with people and just looking someone in the eye and being there in the moment and breathing is also something that's refreshing, and you don't really get day to day, because you don't go up to people and you're like, hello, can I have a tall coffee with extra cream? And you're making complete eye contact, and then they're like, okay, buddy. But yeah, that's something that I love in theater, just connecting with people, moving. And
so what was it like being sort of that theater kid in elementary school and maybe later as you're entering high school?
I think being kind of in dance and choir was pretty normal in elementary school. People were like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's cool. Like everyone has their thing. Some people were sports, some people were, you know, performing. And like when you're in elementary school, everyone's kind of a bit more like, ooh, we're just all doing things. But yeah, when you hit high school, it's a bit different. It's like joining theater in grade 8 was a completely different experience. It was definitely like, are you going to join the dance crowd? Are you going to join the drama kids crowd? It was completely different. But like throughout high school, I ended up being this blend of both, because I was so involved in dancing and theater at my school, and not many people were. So it was nice being a part of both communities, because dance, I feel like they were more, I don't know, people you'd consider popular, and people in the drama room were more people who were expressive and, you know, a bit more out of the loop, a bit more, you know, I don't know, different. I don't know how to say it. They weren't like, they were the most amazing people I could ever work with ever. They inspired me and taught me how to be myself, especially the older people that mentored me in the theater room. And yeah, it was weird being in the drama group, because everyone else kind of looks down on the drama kids. They say, oh yeah, they're theater kids. They're, you know, they're weird, or they, I don't know, they do spontaneous things. And I'm like, well, proven you wrong, because I'm going to go out and do whatever I want and not be as self-conscious as some other people are. So
then how did you transition from doing mostly school productions and like weekend productions to more like public productions as mm-hmm. you are doing now?
I was really lucky. My mom, she offered to put me into this arts umbrella group that I joined for 3 years when I was in grade 8, 9, and 10. And that really introduced me to the theater community in Vancouver. It kind of got me to go out from school and, you know, be a part of these really professional productions. Like, I got thrown into the professional environment, like straight into the snake pit. Like, it was pretty intense for like a grade 8 especially. But it taught me so many things. And I met people who are all around the Lower Mainland, because we met at Granville Island, so lots of people from Vancouver. And I was, and then I left in grade 10 because, you know, I found I got what I needed from that program. And then I ended up coming back to the school with this, like, breadth of knowledge that I just, like, I'm so grateful for. And, yeah, I was kind of... It was kind of like that thing that made me so connected to the community, and that once you get one opportunity, that opportunity leads to the next opportunity, and it's kind of like a chain link. So once you get that first opportunity, it really can be never ending. So I'm seeing where it leads me because it's been going well.
And now you know a couple of directors around Vancouver, right?
Yeah, which is incredible. I've been working with directors who not only just teach youth, but directors who are part of, you know, the comedy scene, and directors who are just like directors of associations. And yeah, now I'm meeting a whole new level of directors in like business because I'm going to these like sponsorship networking events. Yeah.
So it seems like you found your niche in many of these plays and productions that you were in, including Concord Floral, which was a play written by Jordan Tannehill about a greenhouse in a suburban town where something dark and mysterious happens. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It is something that changed my life. It was the year, it was my graduating year, so I think that play is the thing that encouraged me to go out and do theater. It taught me that it's possible to get professional work and enjoy doing theater, even though, you know, you're not going to be making the top bucks or whatever. But I met people who I'm still in contact with. We still have a Facebook group, and we meet up every couple of weeks. We check in on our lives. After the play, we ended up meeting and creating anti-Trump piece for a charity event. So we met up like every week for like a month and, you know, created this play. And I'm like the closest, like, we are the closest group of people that I know. And just the way that the directors who came from Toronto, they are phenomenal, by the way. They taught all of us how to like behave in a group. You know, if you're someone who's more outgoing, maybe it's your turn to take a step back and listen to other people. If you're someone who's more quiet, it's your turn to voice your opinions and say what you want to say. So I think that kind of gauged our conversations and gauged how our group interacts. And we had this mutual baseline respect for each other that we kind of use into our friendship now, which is what theater does to people.
So based on the style of Concord Floral, they casted all teenage-aged actors, which is important for the premise of the play. What are some other reasons, or why do you think that this is such an important play for the way it was directed and produced?
Mm-hmm. I think specifically this play is breaking the boundaries of theater and kind of, you know, exploring what theater can be. Like, a moment in the play is when all of us stand in a line in front of the audience and just stare at them for a minute straight. There is the same amount of lighting on the audience as there is on the people on stage, and we're just making eye contact for a minute. And I just found that so interesting because it was a way of acknowledging the audience as being a part of this experience. Like this performance wouldn't be a thing if they weren't there. And yeah, there's lines in that play that are just so iconic, like, life is infinitely beautiful. I have that on all of my bios on Instagram and Facebook, and I post about it because it's something that we forget. And the play is about an abandoned greenhouse, and like the way that the greenhouse is described is so beautiful, but you wouldn't really consider an abandoned greenhouse that beautiful, maybe, like where it's all like rusted and everything. But it taught me to really appreciate everything and that there's beauty in everything. And one of the other lines in the play was, teenagers are lazy and apathetic. And I thought that was really interesting because society places this view on teenagers that they can't really do anything, they're lazy. And it's like, if you want them to do anything, you need to encourage them. You can't press them down with this, you know, label of you are lazy and you do nothing, because then they're going to sink into it. And I think it's actually the opposite. I think teenagers have the most potential to do things, and they aren't stuck in their ways yet like most adults are. So when the greenhouse, and it's the greenhouse, someone who plays the greenhouse, which I find really cool because you see the greenhouse's perspective, says that teenagers are lazy and apathetic, and that's not true, and they have things to say, and that their voices are valid. I just thought that was really important for people in the community to hear, for adults to hear, because I think if you want to foster a thriving society, you need to encourage people who are joining it.
So I feel like you are embracing that statement and showing that teenagers can be very impactful, as you are doing a lot within the theater community, but also beyond. For example, as director of sponsorship for Ideas Exchange, you also do community work and work for social and environmental change. So can you give some more details about what you do in that organization?
Yeah, Ideas Exchange is a group that is a hub for innovative thinking, and they host forums probably 3 or 4 times a year. And the group really does motivate youth and younger people to be change makers and be like, voice their opinions, start conversations, and have have a part in what's going on. So when I joined the group in the middle of my first year, it was kind of an awkward time. I was the assistant director of sponsorship. And right off the bat, I got opportunities like you wouldn't believe. I was being a part of these forums, and automatically they threw me into, okay, who are the speakers for this event? Okay, what are we going to do for sponsorship for this, that, whatever? And I took on this role that I never, like, I'm a theater student. I didn't think I was going to be, you know, doing all these businessy things. But now I have my own business card because we have sponsorship from Mills. They are amazing, by the way. I love you, Mills, if you're listening. And they, Ideas Exchange is a platform where you can go with your passion projects and create the change you want to see, because you have the people supporting you. You have, like, this marketing team, external team, sponsorship directors, like, so many people connected to Ideas Exchange, like Miguel Arroza, who's one of the founders, who works in international affairs. He is so knowledgeable about how to run a group like this and how to, you know, go forward with how to influence society. And yeah, ever since I was younger, I've always cared about influencing and changing the world because of my mom. She does that. She's a social entrepreneur, so she has inspired me, and I want to change the world through art, because I find that if you find your passion, you're passionate about something, you could be passionate about something else, but why not just blend it and create this beautiful new career that doesn't quite exist yet that the world may need in order to survive?
So speaking of that cool project or your passion project that you can bring to Ideas Exchange, one of the things you're working on is a playwriting competition with a really cool goal. So what is that?
Yeah, my playwriting competition is called Play for Change 24-hour playwriting competition. And the goal of this project is to get a bunch of groups together or teams, and they're going to write this play and be mentored by professors at UBC, nonprofits around Vancouver, and student groups at UBC. And they're going to receive all this research about different themes such as climate change, mental health, refugee crisis, poverty. We're still working on some of the themes, but they'll be given research, and then they'll get together, create the plays, and then they'll perform the plays at the end. Hopefully the nonprofits will come as well. And these plays, I want them to continue the conversation and be going around the community, you know, preaching these issues and creating awareness about these issues. And, you know, I think it'd be great to cross over the disciplines and make this a multidisciplinary experience. So I encourage anyone who isn't a part of the theater community to come and join the playwriting competition, because there's so much to learn from theater, and there's so much to learn from the art of, you know, just sharing an experience. And yeah, this playwriting competition hopefully will bridge the gap between all the different disciplines at UBC theater people, psychology, forestry, science, business. I think I already said that. I think it's just going to be a great opportunity to understand other people and hopefully create some kind of bigger change. If people are creating their own careers in, say, business, that they may take away, you know, messages from these plays and incorporate it in their own practices.
So when and where will this be?
This will be in September. The date is to be determined, but we're hoping the 22nd to the 23rd, like over that weekend. But the dates may change, and it will be at UBC in the theater department buildings, the Dorothy Somerset Studios and the BC Binnings buildings. And the performance site is to be determined, but it will either be on campus or at a theater in the community. And yeah, it's welcome to anyone. We're going to set up the application site sometime the next month. And yeah, I'm excited to be launching it.
So why do you feel that playwriting or theater or even the arts can be such a powerful vehicle for social and environmental change?
Well, I think theater is sometimes undermined. You kind of see it as just like a form of entertainment and, you know, something that doesn't have much of a power. But I find it extremely powerful when you get people in a room, they're sitting in their seats and they are forced to watch a show. It kind of sounds bad when you say it that way, but it's different from TV or television because people can pause things and leave, and you know, you can't do that in a theater, so you're forced to think about this issue that's being presented on stage. And the part I like about it too is that it provides a really cool connection, just being in a room with everyone who's seen the exact same thing. You can leave and have conversations about it, and everyone kind of has different perceptions on it, and people share their perceptions, and that's kind of, you know, breaking the boundaries between, like, you know, everyone has all these different perceptions, and, you know, sometimes we just don't talk about it. But if we do, then we understand each other more and accept each other more and solve lots of social issues. But what I'm really interested in is figuring out how this whole solving environmental issues works, because I think theater has done a really good job of addressing, you know, lots of societal social issues, right. But not like it's pretty new, like this whole environmentalism movement. So I'm really interested to see how people in the theater community and beyond react to seeing like visual representations of maybe like 100 years in the future, or, you know, see, like the art of creativity is going to make so many different cool perceptions on what it means to like live in a world that's going down. So I'm really excited to see how that works, and I'm in the process of understanding it.
So has there been a play or a piece that you remember that has been super impactful or has given you some sort of intense experience?
Mm-hmm. I was actually in a smaller play called The Centurions Project a month ago, and it kind of addressed the topics of, you know, sexual assault and victimization. And it was really, really cool because I worked with Boca del Lupo in a residency, and what we did is, this is a completely new play that hasn't been produced yet, and we were working with the playwright, with the director, with a sound designer, with a stage manager to figure out how the heck we're going to put these words that are on a page on stage. And it got us talking about the issues. Like, there's a rape that happens in it, and there's a murder as well, and I ended up going home and talking with my mom about it a lot, too. I was talking with my mom about, you know, what it means to be vulnerable and what it means to trust other people, and, the dangers of being the dangerous masculinity, like what it means to be masculine, what it means to be feminine, and how that negatively impacts the way we go into decision making on how we think. Because when you're a character, you really have to dive deep into why these characters believe the things they do. And that's why I think the theater community is so open, and why people in the theater community are so open-minded, because you literally have to go and say, why is this person thinking that way? And, you know, address it from there. And that's why I think, you know, actors generally can have an easier time experiencing empathy for other people because they can see where other people are coming. They have, you know, transformed themselves in so many different which ways that they have, they just accept people more easily. And I think that's something that can be spread in society. And heck, if that means everyone does theater, then why not?
Yeah, and that's such an important thing to possess. Are there any other skills that you think that you can get out of being a performer or even being involved within the arts that can add to your life?
Yeah, that one I just mentioned was definitely a big one, just being able to understand other people's experiences, because playing another character, mm-hmm. you have to go through intentions, like why is this person believe in that, and you have to genuinely believe it yourself. And I do also believe it helps you be more in your body and be more comfortable in front of other people, because I feel like in a world where technology is taking over, we're, you know, making less eye contact, we're kind of dissociating ourselves from everyone else. So coming back to just what it means to be with someone, what it means to have a conversation and be able to express words, be able to want to express words. I feel like we're kind of, you know, being very, you know, boxed up into a nope, no human connection now kind of thing by society, and just, you know, how much we were behind screens. And with theater, you learn how to be human again. You learn how to be in your body, how to express what you want, how to, you know, accept other people's beliefs and react and give back. That's kind of how theater works, and to just enjoy life sometimes. Life is lighter than we think.
And I think also having the ability to think on your feet or improvise is also pretty important for stuff that you do as well, such as being director at Ideas Exchange. So do you have any other tips for people who are trying to make organized change?
Mm-hmm. I would say being positive is the biggest one I could give someone, because if you always focus on the nitty-gritty, what's the issue, what's the problem, it creates a horrible atmosphere, and there's no solutions that come out of it. So it's great to acknowledge the problem, but also looking at the solution is very important, and that's something I would say. And also being open to other people's opinions, you know, listening to other people is huge. When creating organized change, you really can't just say, this is my opinion, listen to me. Like, that's not how that works. You need to be able to listen to other people, see where they're coming from, find the root cause of how they got there, right? Because we're all born into situations we don't choose. And we have to see, hey, like, sometimes people have more privilege. Some people, you know, have these opinions because they're in societies or are with people who believe that. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. So listening and, being positive and listening is probably, like, the best you can do.
So you're really busy. What are three things that keep you moving, keep you going?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and it's interesting. I find that doing what you love just kind of for an hour every day is nice. So I go home and I listen to my musical set list, and I just sing it out loud, and I dance it around my living room. And sometimes if I don't have time for that, you know, I'll listen to it on the bus or just whatever you like to do. I like writing poetry. I like just going for a walk, you know, unloading. But spending a certain amount of time in a day for you is really important. And I've been balancing this work life and UBC work and, you know, being in plays, but definitely prioritizing what's important to you is also very, very key. So I always prioritize what makes me feel good and what I really want out of life. So that's something to look out for.
Okay. And finally, what words are you currently living by? For example, do you have a motto, a mantra?
I actually do. It's be a loving presence in every moment. I find whatever situation you're in, whatever doubts you have, if you lean back on that, it's surely going to be a good time.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I loved hearing your perspective and hearing that enthusiasm and passion for the arts, which is quite special.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been really, really cool and a new experience.
So, Chantel, where can they find you on the internet?
I guess you can find me on Facebook. I have an Instagram as well, at Chantel Lives. And yeah, I post a lot on my Facebook about, you know, things going on in the community and my opinions about certain pipeline decisions and such that I will not go into, but Chantel Gearing, so yeah.
And you might have an IMDb page coming up, right?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I think, yeah, I was in a short film recently, but we'll see how that goes.
And maybe on the credits on Riverdale. I don't know. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. It's been good.
Of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts on Main Street at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Biltmore Cabaret, Red Cat Records, Lucky Comics, The Wallflower Modern Diner, Neptune Records, The Rag Machine, The Regional Assembly of Text, and so many more.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.